All right, welcome back to another episode of the Live Your Dreams podcast. I'm your host, Joe Wallace, alongside my fantastic co-host,
Chris Victor.
Chris, I have to tell you, I am so excited. We are here day one, South by Southwest 2024, and we are here with a phenomenal individual. Yeah. You are somebody that is so inspiring.
Yes.
This is a showrunner, executive producer, and phenomenal editor. You can do it all. Inbal Lesnar, thank you so much for coming here for 2024 South by Southwest for Stormy.
Thank you for having me. The energy is infectious.
Awesome.
That's what we want, really. Yeah. Your story is a fantastic one. Now, let's talk about Stormy really quickly, because we're here at 2024 South by Southwest. This is going to be on Peacock. It's very exciting. Day one, your film is premiering.
Yes.
Yep. It's opening night tonight, and we get to unveil this fantastic new documentary. Directed by Sarah Gibson and produced by Aaron Lee Carr. Judd Apatow is an EP, as well as several other phenomenal producers. And I edited it with Ben Kaplan, and just really excited to show it to the world. I think people think they know Stormy and the story, but I think they're in for a big surprise when they really see the film and see what her real life is like.
I'm sure. Now, as an editor, you said the audience is going to be in for a surprise. How do you feel when you're going through the footage and you get to see this kind of, like, you're unveiling the puzzle to yourself? It must be a phenomenal process.
Yes. And what happened on this film is we kept getting new footage. Okay. As we were editing the film, we discovered and were able to obtain additional footage from three other filmmakers who documented Stormy over the years, as early as 2006, around the time when she met Trump for the first time, and then again in 2018, she, as a director herself, was savvy enough to invite friends, colleagues, that to document her as she was going through this scandal. And so there was a wealth of footage that kept coming into the editing room, and sometimes we had to stop to just watch it and process it and then decide what would make its way into the film.
That's incredible, because people that don't know, post-production is like assembling a massive jigsaw puzzle. And I've sat in rooms that I didn't even claim to be anywhere near an editor of your status, but to sit there and see that puzzle coming, how is it for an editor when you keep getting more and more footage? Because you're already assembling this piece, and now you keep getting more on top. How's that part of the process?
I think it's stressful for producers, but for editors, I relish in it. I want to swim, drown in footage. Yeah. The more, the better. I love the wealth of footage. I love having options. I love putting scenes on my cards on the storyboard and then playing around with them, taking them out, putting them back in. I love a lot of scenes that end up on the cutting room floor, but it's part of the process. So for me, the more, the better.
No, I love that. And you know, what's exciting about you, that is such an amazing medium, editing, right? What motivated you, because you are such a phenomenal editor and you can get into some of the other projects that you're doing and they're so well-renowned and have landed on major platforms. What motivated you to kind of get into this world and say, you know, I want to tell storytelling mediums through editing?
Oh, wow. I discovered editing in high school. I went to a high school filmmaking program back in Israel, and I had a phenomenal editing teacher who showed us some films, and I remember specifically a scene about an Israeli music artist making like an impromptu concert in a little town, and she paused that scene and she said, "How many cameras do you think were rolling?" And I remember thinking, like, my sort of mathematical brain, because I was also an honor student in math and physics. So I was like, okay, I think there's one camera on the drummer, one camera on the lead singer, one camera on the audience, maybe three or four rolling at the same time. And she said there was one camera.
Yep.
And my brain went, and that was my eureka moment, where, oh, I get it. You create the illusion in order to tell the story. And, you know, doing that with footage, and maybe the audience was from another song, and maybe the guitar player cutaway was from another song, but somehow they put it together to create this new reality and this new story, whatever serves the story. And so I think that was my first thought about how this is an intersection of logic and technology and storytelling and art that I was really interested in and that I could be maybe good at.
That is such a beautiful, well way put to put the editing process. Story, logic, art, it all comes together. That is so well put, a beautiful way of saying that. Now, you get out of high school, you're motivated, you want to start moving in this business. Then where do you take your first steps after that? Because if a lot of our listeners are younger, they may want to be like you one day. What are the steps to start getting involved to say, you know what, how do I find footage to edit? How do I get involved with these processes?
Well, I think I had sort of an unusual path. My first gig was an assistant editor in a big documentary project. And at the time, this was, nonlinear editing was just starting. It was tape based. Yep. I had spent many hours, many nights in a Tel Aviv post-production facility digitizing tapes. And then I had to do my military service in Israel. Because I had this training, I was doing films for the military, and then started working as a freelance editor. But I really wanted to go to school, even though I could already start working. I wanted to get an academic degree.
Sure.
And I was really lucky to get a full scholarship to NYU Film School, where I studied with some of the best.
Yes.
Documentary producers, editors, and other filmmakers, learning film history and many other things, psychology, just many other things that I think made my education more well-rounded.
You seem like a very well-rounded person, actually, which is a fantastic
question. I see that you went to NYU, but now you live in LA, you're doing it there. What prompted you to do that move? Because personally, I saw your documentaries. I can't wait to see that series. Between 2015 and 18, I believe, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yep.
I lived through all those years. I'm very fascinated about what you're doing.
Right around the time I graduated NYU Film School was 9/11. I lived downtown. There was a tough time in the local business there. I couldn't get freelance work. There was sort of a recession in New York City. And I decided to move out to LA and try my luck there. This was before remoting, and you really had to be there. And I remember just going door to door from post house to post house, giving my resume and giving my VHS reel to anybody who would agree to watch it. I had a short list of people was given to me by a couple of professors at NYU, people they suggested I would visit and have coffee with and take out to coffee. And, it wasn't until the only person I knew in LA was a friend from the military. And he had just was my friend Nimrod. He was a lead editor on a show, and he convinced the producer to take a chance on me and let me edit. And that was my first job. But I was lucky enough that from that first job, I worked steadily, sort of moving from one job to the next for the next 22 years. So a lot of hard work. And you were talking about the decade series for CNN. That only came about after I had an Emmy nomination for an indie film I did about an Israeli beauty queen who was raped in Italy 7 weeks before winning the Miss World crown, and that was called Brave Miss World. And I think after that nomination, people in LA care about awards. And so I got a call saying, we have a spot for you to edit the 70s. And I stayed on that show for 6 seasons. So 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and then the movies, which was kind of a sister series about the history of motion pictures. Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
I can't wait to see more. This is fascinating. You have to send me some of that stuff.
Absolutely.
No, it never seems to stop for you, which is fantastic. And that's such a motivating thing, because it's so hard, as you said, once you broke into the business, you never stopped working. And most people that break into this business almost never work. So, you would take a completely opposite effect, which is fantastic. Now, above the editing, you're also an executive producer, a showrunner. You're on both sides. I'm very excited to hear kind of how you got involved in that world, because again, now you're, an editor is a completely different medium and somebody has to be executive producing or show running a show.
I think as a documentary editor, you always do more than just editing.
Sure.
I think documentary editors are writers. They're often producers. If you're missing a piece of footage, you might go and be an archival researcher to try to find it yourself. often your own assistant editor, your own publicist, you know, you just kind of have to wear a lot of hats. So early on, I did a feature about Simon Wiesenthal, the Nazi hunter, and the producer saw how much work I put into it and offered me a co-producer credit. And so slowly but surely, I started getting producer credits on projects that I was doing, and then met my producing partner, Cecilia Peck. And together we did not only Brave Miss World, but Seduced, about the NXIVM cult, for Starz. And that one, that was my first as an executive producer, creator, writer, and lead editor. And then now, because of that cult series, we did Escaping Twin Flames for Netflix, about the Twin Flames universe cult. So on that one, I'm also an executive producer and editor. And we just won the ACE Eddie Award last Sunday. We won the American Cinema Editors Best Editing for a Documentary Non-Theatrical, and that was very exciting. Our whole team got that award. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of been a roller coaster. I've dabbled in both scripted and unscripted work, and just trying to keep it interesting.
Do you ever think to yourself, wow, the little girl that sat there and said how many cameras are going to be on that video is going to come this far in their life? It's incredible how you've come so far and took this journey and became such a great success at it.
Well, thank you. No, I never think more than 2 weeks ahead. This is not my personality, but you know, you dream big, and I knew I can do the work. It was just a matter of anybody to take a chance on me and trust me. And so I think if you show up to a room and you say, well, I'm going to work hard and I'm going to listen to you, I'm going to be a good collaborator, I want to help you realize your creative vision for this project, then hopefully people, you know, will take a chance and will have trust that you can be on their team.
I was going to say, it's just great. Back to that case with the Seduction, was it the one?
Seduced.
Is that the one with the 5-year-old daughter?
That was Brave Miss World.
Yeah, so what you did was you gave her a platform, Brave Miss World, to not only keep the rapist in jail, was that correct, by having her story told by many?
Well, we just followed a story that was unfolding in real time. We started filming Lenore Abargiel 10 years after her rape in Italy, and it just happened that as we were filming, we thought it would be a one-year project, and it, because we ran out of money and the economy crashed in 2008, it ended up being a six-year project. And as we were filming and trying to get the money to finish the project, her rapist came up for parole. Okay. And so we were then following her as she was fighting the legal system to keep him in jail, in prison, for the rest of his original sentence.
Wow.
That's amazing. And she went through a transformation from, you know, a bathing suit supermodel to an orthodox lawyer and a mom. And so we really followed a big chunk of her life changing from one end to the other. And I think that's what makes the film really special. So in a way, it was blessing in disguise that we couldn't finish the film fast enough. But there was just so much that happened in her life that we were able to follow that made the film very special.
I mean, what's amazing with your medium is that you're literally changing people's lives with it. Look what you did out there. I mean, it's just such a powerful medium of how you do it. That's a great responsibility to take on. It's such an honor. I'm sure you feel that way when you're talking about these videos or looking at this footage. You're going to change somebody's life throughout these videos.
Well, thank you. It's a great, we do entertainment. I don't kid myself that I'm changing the world. There is, as you say, a sense of calling. I like that there's an added value that maybe make people reconsider their position on a certain issue or develop empathy for a person they didn't feel connected to. You know, with Stormy, I think people dismiss her as, you know, a gold digger or an adult porn star. They may have judgment about what she chose to do for a profession. But I think I came to it with a lot of empathy as a working mom, as, you know, a mother going through the dissolution of her marriage. I just saw a lot of parallels that made me feel for her and understand how a person in the eye of a storm, a scandal like this, what would that feel to be that, to have every person in the world know your name, to have such a sort of media superstorm around you.
Yes, that is so well put. What is going through her mind in all this time? It's amazing that you're going to get to portray that through this. Now, I read that she's going to actually be here today. That's kind of fascinating. She's going
to
be
expecting her to land any minute.
Look at this. So now you're going to be there. She's going to be seeing your work. How does that feel? Do you have any anticipation, anxiety over this? I mean, you're going to obviously be speaking to her at some point.
I hope so. I never met her, which is typical for editors. We sit in, edit rooms, and I spend a lot of time with her, as I do with my other documentary subjects, and I know every muscle in her face probably better than she does. I know the way she speaks and the way she moves, and the way she has this ability to turn very dark moments into amazing humor.
Wow, yeah.
But I never met her in person. So we call them our Edit Bay friends, the friends we get very close to, but we never get to meet. And so this is the time. Film festivals and screenings like this are the time when we get to actually meet these, subjects in person. I hope I get to shake her hand and tell her what honor it's been to spend all this time with her on my monitors. It's going to be exciting. There's nothing like seeing your work playing in front of live audience in a festival. And, now with streaming and so much of our content going to TV, it's rare to have that opportunity. And I love it. And, anytime my films are screened publicly, I try to go. It's very educational for me to be able to feel the audience, where they get restless, where do they laugh, where do they gasp, how they breathe. It really helps me develop my craft, my timing, my rhythm.
That is so amazing to hear because, again, your experience level, you are still looking to develop your craft.
Of course.
That is so good for all of our listeners out there, especially the young ones. You need to always develop craft because at the end of the day, isn't that what it's all about?
Develop craft. Look for mentorship. I've been a mentor in several programs. I teach.
Oh, great.
I taught at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts film editing. I now teach at AFI documentary film editing, and I am a thesis film mentor there. I strongly feel that young film students need to look for mentorship programs or for private mentorships. Just reach out to professionals that they look up to, professionals who do the kind of work that you aspire to do, and just ask them. I mean, editors are, in general, very, very generous people. I love editors. They're the best people. Most of my friends are editors. And I don't know any editor who will not respond to an email from a student or from an aspiring editor or filmmaker and give their time to have coffee, to advise, to have a phone call. I mean, they tend to be very, very generous with their time and advice.
Please.
I was going to say, I too love mentors, and you're actually one of mine. I read your bio. You've done quite a lot. It's amazing. But just like here, we're giving a platform for people to hear your story. You're telling your story. You're mentoring people through this reach that we have. How do you feel about that with the documentary? Also, getting that story out there, is it moving you? Is it a visceral response like with me? With regards, I feel like I'm actually changing the world in some way.
I don't know if I'm changing the world, but as I said, I'm hoping I'm helping people think about certain topics maybe a little differently, reconsider their position, develop empathy, laugh, cry, just be mindful of how they frame their conversations around certain things. And there's a lot of clickbaiting out there. You think you know the story from the headlines. I think it's important to look beyond the headline and to really understand what drives people, how it affects people. When you write something nasty on Twitter, like, what is the person at the end of that comment? How are they going to be impacted by it? How is their child going to be impacted by it? So I can't imagine what it's like to be Stormy's daughter reading some of the things that are said about her online. For her, it's life and death. She's getting a ton of death threats now with the upcoming hush payment trial. And it's important to just pause for a second and reconsider that she's a human, yeah. and that she's a mother, and she was just trying to make her way in the world and be a good mother, and this thing just sort of upended her life.
No, you're absolutely right. And people forget sometimes, people you see on screen, they are human beings. That's very important. And talking about human beings, outside of all of your accolades, you are so accomplished in life as well. How do you find time? Out of all of this that you're doing, how do you find time for yourself? Outside of all the movies and documentaries, how do you find time for you?
Good question. I don't know. I have two daughters, Sasha and Ruby. They are what makes me wake up in the morning and, try to get them to school on time. And then I have I take my time to myself to call my best friend, Gilly, who's here with me on my way back home on my drive. And I try to take a shower and reset. I do most of my editing in the shower. A lot of editors will tell you that's where they get the best editing ideas. So that's a little time I take to myself. I try to do self-care. It's actually a big kind of topic in the industry these days, how to care for yourself, especially when you deal like me with very dark subject matters. I mean, I've done anything in the last 25 years from genocide and sexual assault and racism and sexism and police brutality and AIDS. I mean, you name it. If it's dark, they call me.
Did you find that ever eking into your personal life at all? Do you feel like you said you have to step away for a moment to pull yourself out of that?
Sure. For many years, I didn't give it much thought. I was like, okay, I think I'm good at compartmentalizing and I can set it aside and go home. But it's the kind of work that you never really leave in the office when you go home. It kind of stays with you. You dream about it. You shower with it, as I said. I think you have to be mindful of the self-care. There's a lot of talk in our industry now about the long-term exposure to secondhand trauma and what that does to a person. I think we have to be more mindful of that. And I think the industry is starting to catch on, and that my last few projects, including my current one, the producers or the streamers have offered mental health services for the creators as well as this on-camera subject. So, if I feel run down, I try to take a personal day off. I go to therapy. I try to, as much as possible, create some kind of separation between the trauma I'm exposed to at work and my personal life. And it's still a work in progress. I can't tell you I'm really good at it, but I'm trying.
Well, and isn't it all a work in progress in life? So before we get out of here, we are at South by Southwest 2024, beautiful Austin, Texas. Do you two, you and your friend, have plans for the rest of Austin? You guys going to be hanging out for the week? What are you guys doing outside of the Stormy premiere?
I mean, you tell me. We're trying to find the best party.
We'll have our coordinator send you some parties that are going on. There's a lot of fun things happening, a lot of great lounges. I have to tell you another great thing. There's so many great interviews going on at South by Southwest. So I got the signal. We have to get running because there's going to be another great interview coming in here, not by us, but somebody else. So we're not cutting you off, but they're kicking us out. But at the same time, we have to thank you so much for coming on. Stormy premiering at 2024 Southwest. And again, March 18th, I believe, on Peacock.
Yep. Sun on Peacock, and stay tuned.
Well, thank you so much for going on. Before we go, any places our fans can look up things by you, Instagram handles, websites, anywhere we can learn more about you, if you want that information out there?
My Instagram handle, I'm not very good at this thing, so I think I'm a little too old, but it's InBalLessner, one word, InBalLessner, and you can connect with me there. I'm not very private. I'm not very famous. I still respond to anybody who writes me on Instagram.
That's fantastic. In InBalLessner, everybody. Yes. Live Your Dreams podcast. We're so excited. Day one, 2024, South by Southwest. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much.